I am Shisada Akona Kamara, and welcome to Satsang with the Shambhala Center. You are beginningless. You are endless. You are divine. Greetings. This is Shisada Akona Kamara with the Shambhala Center for Spiritual Awareness. Thank you so much for joining us tonight for satsang. This is a very auspicious occasion for us tonight, and I'm joined by our Vice President, PLAN, who is sitting here looking very much producer-like. And we're going to do things a little different tonight just because it is our first show, and many of you know of me, but don't really know anything about my story. So it felt appropriate that tonight I would share a bit of my own journey and how I came to do the work that I am doing at this time. So I asked PLAN if she would mind this evening kind of serving as the interviewer, which should work quite well for tonight. And then starting next week, we'll kick in with a regular satsang session. And we'll get into that later this evening, talking about what we do during a satsang group. What I would like to start with is spiritual protection that was given to me by my most beloved Guruji, named Atona Reyes. It is a very powerful protection. I use it with everybody that I work with and myself. And I always start every session that I do with anybody or with a group with this protection. So if I could ask everyone who is tuning in tonight to just take a deep breath and close your eyes and get yourself centered. And I'm going to go ahead and say this protection for everybody who is watching. Mother, Father, God, that I am, through the great Central Sun Hierarchy, through the Office of the Christ, through the Order of Melchizedek, I call upon Archangel Michael to bring the sapphire blue ray. Cut away, cut away, cut away anything in all of our four lower vehicles not emanating directly from our I Am presence. I now call on Archangel Zachiel, Keeper of the Violet Flame. Blaze, blaze, blaze the violet flame through all of our four lower bodies. Transmute, transmute, transmute all the psychic debris Michael has cut free. I now bring forth the invincible ring pass knot and the mirror blue light of invisibility to completely surround each of us. And I call forward a shaft of pure Christ light, one to surround each person who is listening tonight and who will be listening at any point in the future. And I ask that these shafts of light be brought to the center of the earth, where I call on Archangel Gabriel to seal them. And I ask that the legions of Michael completely surround each tube of light. And now I ask that our vibrations be raised high above the psychic and astral worlds to the highest realm of illumined truth we each can attain at this time. And now, Mother, Father, God, we place ourselves in service to you, to humanity, and I place myself in service tonight to this group. We ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted into our perceptions, and all else of the lower mind be kept out. And we ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted through us. And because we have asked this, we consider it so. So be it. All right. So, PLAN. What do you have for me?
Okay. I think, first off, people would want to know, how did you come into this work?
Do you want the 30-second version or do you want the 5-minute version? How did I come into this work? You know, it's an interesting question because I think what you discover on your journey, wherever your journey leads you, is that everything has been at play for your entire life that has led up to whatever that work is. And that's what I discovered for myself, because I certainly didn't set out to be a spiritual guide. I come from a background in education, actually. I'm degreed in English, actually British literature, and I was certified to teach high school English. I thought I would do that because that's what my mom did, and I just figured I'd be a teacher. And it's funny, one thing leads to another. I never did teach. And then I got involved just doing all kinds of different work. I did a lot of marketing work and a lot of sales work, a lot of office management, executive admin stuff. So I'm like very used to multitasking and, you know, dealing with all these details and stuff. But the funny thing is that from the time I was tiny, spirituality was a very, very normal part of my life. I had a grandmother who was quite adept at a Ouija board. Her mother used to read tea leaves. You know, I just kind of grew up in this kind of psychic family where we didn't question that, you know, of course, it was just a given that if you ever say you were going to use a Ouija board, like it was a given you would put the white light of Christ around you. Like, why did we do that? I have no idea. Who learned that? I don't know. But it was just something we always did. And so from the time I was, you know, a voracious reader as a kid, and my mom was very much into, you know, it was self-improvement, but back then in the later 70s and everything, what was going on then, it was like self-improvement, and it was all kind of bundled in there with spirituality at the same time. So through my mom, she got me involved in reading, you know, like Ruth Montgomery and Edgar Cayce. Like, I cut my teeth on all of that reading. And the funny thing was that I was raised in the church, in the setting that, you know, we were United Methodists, so they're very loose Christians, you know, but we did go to church every week. And I always... It was funny because I never understood it. I would leave very confused because I would see how people viewed, you know, who I would refer to as Yeshua, Jesus, and I didn't get it. I was like, but you're not meant to put him up on a pedestal. Like, that's not what his message was. He said that anything I can do, you will do even better. And I was like, so why are we holding him there when we're that? And I always had an understanding that God was inside of me, that I didn't need a church, that whenever I tuned in, I was having that kind of communion. And of course, you know, no one else really seemed to understand that, but I knew that. And so my mom, I guess, watching me, you know, kind of move through my world, kind of get me set on doing all of that kind of reading. And it just really clicked for me very much. So that was kind of me growing up. And then I left all of that behind for a while because when I was 30, I had my first child, and I have three beautiful children. But it was like I took time out from my spiritual life to be very, very grounded and to be a mommy, you know. And that was great. So that was like in the year 2000. But the funny thing was that before I got pregnant, I wish my husband was here because he'd remember better than me. But it seems like it was like a year before, I had this thing that just came to me, and it was like this inspiration that said, you know, you need to build a spiritual retreat center. And it was funny because it was like, well, yeah, okay, right? Like, how is that going to happen? And I brought it to my husband, and we kind of sat and looked at it together. And it was like, wow, wouldn't that be amazing? You know, and I had this thing of it being something that was just so different, that it wasn't grounded in any one, it wasn't grounded in religion at all, but it welcomed all religions, and that it would be a location people could come to learn almost anything, like anything in the arts, or to come as a conference center and hear people who, you know, like the Deepak Chopras and all the, you know, the Wayne Dyers, all these beautiful people, to have them come and speak. And I just, like, I could see this whole thing, and it was like huge. And we were very excited about it for months until, this is the kicker, you know, lower mind sneaks in. So it was like the inspiration was there, and it was divinely placed. There was no question. But what happened was one day, I had the thought of, oh my gosh, like, how are we going to pay for that? You know, like, we need hundreds of acres of property. How on earth are we going to, I mean, we're, you know, living paycheck to paycheck. And I was like, oh, well, so I guess it's just not going to happen. And I let it kind of sit back in the recesses, but it never really left me. You know, I think I was a little heartbroken by the thought that I can't make this happen, right? You know, little did I know that I, quote unquote, you know, didn't need to make anything happen. But at the time, I didn't have that understanding. So, so I got it back, you know, kind of very grounded in the world, and had my kids. And you know, it was very stressful. My husband and I moved through a period that was financially very difficult. He was in a certain line of work that he'd been in for quite some time, and it was just too challenging to do that and have children at the same time, because he worked really crazy hours. And it was, you know, we were away from my family and his family. We lived in a completely different state. It wasn't easy to go to visit anybody, so we had no help. And I felt like after we had our second child, like I was, you know, basically like a single mom, because he just wasn't around. And so when I got pregnant with my third, you know, we kind of decided, okay, what are we going to do here? And my husband's like, I don't want to do this anymore. And his concern was that everyone he saw in his industry who kept moving forward, you know, they were all divorced. They were on second and third marriages, you know, and it was just a mess. And that was the last thing he wanted for us. So we looked at changing things, and we did really change things. We actually moved back to where I was from for about a year and a half. And that was, you know, a godsend in some ways, and a very difficult trial in others. And then we came back down to North Carolina, where we still are now. And coming back, again, was filled with just, it's kind of like one thing after another. The job we came back to for my husband to work at fell through, and we came down and we had bought a house and there was no job. And it was just, it was really hard. And so in the meantime, he got a job that was, you know, meant to be a temporary job. And I knew I had to find something. So I ended up getting a job doing loan origination, you know, at the time when there was good money to be made. I didn't know at the time that it was at the very end of the time when there was good money to be made. So I got involved doing that. And that's kind of what led me. This is a very roundabout answer, I know, but that's really what led me to the big shift. You know, everyone goes through, not everyone, but most people really do experience that, you know, it's almost cliche, but that dark night of the soul before something major breaks through. And I absolutely was one of those people. I was doing loans and I could see it coming. I could watch and see that we were nearing the end of this time, and I could see that past a certain date, I would have no more clients and no money coming in. And I should probably also add that at the time I was working part-time from home. I had three children, and I think my son at that time had gone into kindergarten, but I had literally two kids in diapers at one time, and I had three of them at home with me. And so I was working part-time from home, and I'm making phone calls to customers and trying to make like a lot of money every month to help so that we could get our bills met and everything. And between the kids and the pressure for the money and just everything, it was like I just felt like I was going to completely lose it. And for those of you listening, I'm sure each of you has your own story that matches this in its own way. But, you know, I literally found myself asking myself, where is that line between sanity and insanity, or you know, the moment of the nervous breakdown? Like, where does it actually happen? Because I felt like I had come up to it so many times, and but yet there was still something there. And so it's interesting. I kind of called it forward. Again, I didn't know it at the time. I had a neighbor who came over one day, and she was lovely. She at times, you know, would kind of take my kids from me so I could, you know, go out and have a cup of coffee with my husband or something. And she came over one day, and I was standing outside, and I was watering the flowers in the front, and I was just like beside myself. Just, I was done, like, you know, just done. And she's like, "Are you doing okay?" And I was like, you know, I said, I would give my eye teeth for some time alone. Like, I just want to be alone. I don't want to be with anybody. I just want to be alone, you know. And within probably 2, maybe 3 days, I ended up in the hospital. I thought I was dying of a heart attack, which now I actually know was a Kundalini awakening. But at the time, I didn't even know what Kundalini was. And I literally woke up one night and I thought I was dying. Told my husband, I woke him up and I said, if I lose consciousness, call 911, which is a horrible way to be woken up at night. So I ended up in the hospital. They did recognize something was going on with my heart, but then through further testing and all, you know, I stayed for a weekend and they really couldn't find it. And I kind of followed it up with all kinds of tests and blah, blah. And what I realized at the end of it was that something just had to shift. And that's what I was really looking at, that what I was doing was not sustainable. And at the same time, I could, my conscious itself was saying, like, or excuse me, my conscience was saying, you know, you can't do this lone thing anymore. Like, the way the whole program is set up is just not, it's just not okay, you know? And so that was kind of eating at me. So after this whole hospital experience and everything, I kind of came home saying, well, I'm not doing it anymore. Which was probably just as crazy, because now all of that income was completely gone. I had no idea what I would do, but I wasn't doing that anymore. And all I knew to do was just trust that my, you know, my gut was saying, you can't do this. And I was going to trust that. And all I could do was trust that whatever was supposed to happen was going to happen. So after that, when there was literally nothing going on, I was feeling very frustrated. We had refinanced our house to cash out some money, you know, like the last little bit of money we could. And I was seeing the end of that coming, you know, and I've always been the one who kind of handles the bills. So I was just sitting knowing all this was going on and trying to kind of somewhat protect my husband from it. But at the same time, he had to know too. And it was just, you know, we were horribly stressed. And I remember saying to my husband, you know what? I'm like, I'm going to go find a psychic. I'm going to go get a reading. And it had been years. I mean, probably 20 years since I'd had a reading done, you know. But I was like, I feel like I'm just at that place in my life where I need it. So I'm going to do it. And I said, I don't care if we don't have the money. I'm going to figure out a way to pay for it. And I'm going to go get a reading. So I got online and I literally just in my little Google thing, I typed in, you know, psychics, Charlotte, North Carolina. And the first one that pops up is a woman named Mary Beth Wren. And I looked at her name and I clicked on the link and it brought me to her website. And I was like, that's it. She's the one. So I told Perry about it. And excuse me. That's my husband, Perry. And I said, you know, you're going to. I'm like, I scheduled it for both of us. And he was like, okay. So God bless him. He came with me and we actually had a beautiful meeting with Mary Beth. She's an amazing woman and a very, very psychic, very gifted psychic. But we had this beautiful reading. And the thing that impressed me the most about that reading was that she said to me toward the end, she said, and this is the interesting thing. So Mary Beth is an auric. So what she does is she reads your aura. And of course, you know, your aura is your emotional body. Now, remember I said that, you know, these things had happened to me before I had my kids, the thought of the retreat and all, I had stuffed back there, right? And I really had, I'd stuffed it. I hadn't thought about it in years. So toward the end of the reading, she said to me, she looks at me, she has this puzzled look on her face, and she looks at me and she says, have you ever thought about opening a spiritual retreat or a wellness center, or, you know? And I was like, you've got to be kidding me. And I said, yeah, you know? And she's like, you need to do that. And I was like, you know, like, who are you and why? Why are you telling me to do this? So it was very interesting because at the time, Mary Beth was in the process of pulling together a group of people, and she wanted to have a wellness center in Charlotte. And her vision was different than mine, but they certainly, you know, coupled up beautifully. She saw in, you know, in Charlotte itself, and wanted to have, you know, chiropractic there and all kinds of different practitioners and things. And so she said, you know, I'd like to invite you and your husband to come. We're doing kind of a meeting where I'm just getting some people together for, you know, potentially maybe a future board or something like that. But we just want to kick around ideas. And I'm like, yeah, that would be great. So it must be we got my neighbor, because Perry and I both went to that meeting. And it was very exciting. It was like something got lit again, you know, that had been smoldering, I mean, just barely for a very long time. And at the same time, it was interesting because she also ran a meetup group in Charlotte. I'm going to shamelessly plug her now. It's called the Body, Mind, Spirit Adventure Group in Charlotte. And Mary Beth has been running that thing on and off for a very long time. And she invited me to attend those meetings. They were weekly. And so I said, yeah, you know, I mean, for me, of course, remember, I've got three small children and I'm not working outside of the house. So it was like any excuse I had to go away and just be an adult for an hour was an amazing thing. So I was like, of course, I'm going to come. And she said, you know, she said, there's another woman I really want you to meet. And she had just met her as well. I mean, like literally right around the same time that I met her. And I was like, okay. So I went to the meeting, and I don't even remember who was speaking that night or anything, but I just, you know, I very much just settled into this group of people, you know, these seekers, and I felt very comfortable there immediately. And so I met this woman, and I won't use her name, although I'd like to, but I'll protect her privacy. But I met this woman that we really clicked very quickly. And we would see each other each week at these meetings. And after the meetings, we would go to a coffee place and just sit and have coffee until they kicked us out, basically. And I found that when I would sit with this woman, like, we'd have these amazing conversations. And, you know, they were those cool conversations where time flies and you find out you have to leave and you're like, but I don't want to leave. Like, this is so engaging. So we really were very connected. So we got to know each other pretty well. And she started like coming over to have tea and, you know, we would just talk and everything. And, you know, she was very much a seeker, and we came from very, very different backgrounds, but really had a resonance together. And the funny thing is that I didn't mention, so I'll have to backtrack a little, is that after my experience in the hospital, when I came back and literally thought I was losing it, I did have that moment, you know, where you're laying on your bathroom floor in tears because you just can't do it anymore. And I remember that moment. And I remember it was during the day, you know, my husband was working and I don't remember what my girls were doing and maybe they were napping or something, but I just remember I had this little tiny bathroom off the master and I was just sitting on the floor, just sobbing and looking, and I literally looked up, you know, as if God is up, right? So I looked up and I'm like, it's funny, right? But I look up and I was just like, you know, I don't care. I don't care anymore what it takes. I know I can't do this. And all I want is truth. And that's what I found myself saying, that all I want is truth. And I wasn't even thinking of it, you know, in a spiritual capacity. It's like something else took over and said it for me, because I don't really know what I was thinking, but that's how I felt. And so this, you know, just precedes what's going on with meeting Mary Beth and this other woman. So this is all happening in a very, you know, I was in the hospital in August and then, you know, met this woman in September and got to know her. Well, by maybe late September, I was hearing stories about this other woman. Now, the woman that I had befriended had a woman that she was connected with down in Florida. And that woman in Florida was connected with this other woman who was in Colorado, right? So I'm hearing about this really cool lady in Colorado. And the reason that I start hearing about her is because my friend, her understanding was that this woman in Colorado was working on pulling together, guess what, a spiritual retreat. And so my friend was like, I really think you would hit it off with her. And maybe this is what, maybe you, your retreat shouldn't be here. Maybe it's supposed to be across the country. Okay. And so through my friend, I was lucky enough to get, hooked up through, instant messaging with, to say amazing is doesn't even do it justice, but the most amazing woman, named Atona Reyes. And, I had no idea who she was. Not many people do. And I had no idea what she did, but I just knew like I needed to connect with her because of this retreat thing. So that's how I got initially to know Atona, because we were doing this back and forth and talking about stuff. So the super funny thing is that she later told me that when she heard about my husband and when I spoke his name to her, it registered something for her, and she actually recognized him. She knows my husband. And she was like, oh my gosh, like I didn't know he was in physical form here, which is very funny. So she really wanted to meet us because she wanted to see my husband. And so when she came to town, the first time was around Thanksgiving, and we did not get to meet up. But she came back I guess it was before Christmas. She came back. And when she came back, we had an opportunity to meet her. And I won't go through kind of everything that happened in the meeting. You may get bored with all of that, although I doubt it. It's Atona. But anyway, when she told me later that, like, literally when I came to her hotel room and I saw her, that she was given the information that I was meant to work with her, right? She didn't have that up until then. And so I go to her hotel room. I don't know she's a guide, okay? I don't know this. And I go to her hotel room, and she met with me separately from my husband. And it's hysterical how your guide does this with you. Of course, I didn't know she was my guide. But literally within 5 minutes of being in that hotel room with her, I'm in just tears. I'm a complete puddle in her hotel room. I don't even know this woman. And I just, like, there's something about them that's like, you're so safe and you know it so instantly that you just bear everything. And that's where I was sitting with her. And she helped me recognize immediately that I was searching for something that was much deeper than whatever this world had to offer. And basically, she didn't tell me that she would be the one to guide me on that path, but it was kind of understood that I would continue to be in communication with her. It was just amazing. It was absolutely amazing. And that was the first, I'm trying to remember, it may have been another time that I met her, but she was in that same hotel, and I met her there. And that was when I had my first experience with one of the masters, which was, it was crazy, because I was sitting there. I guess maybe she was gauging kind of where I was at. I don't know what she was doing, but I was sitting, who knows? I was sitting in this one spot, and she's across the room sitting in a chair. And, and my husband was with me, actually. Maybe it was that day. And all of a sudden, I felt this energy. And I've always been one of those people where I do feel energy, and I never really thought about it. Like, there's a lot of things that I later discovered that were just kind of these, people would think of them as gifts or whatever, but I lived with them my whole life, so I never thought of it, right? And I just looked at her, and I had this sense that there was someone behind her. I mean, there was like no mistaking it. And I looked at her and I said, who's behind you, right? And she looked at me and she gets this grin. Now, anyone who knows Atona knows the grin. So she gives me this grin and she says, oh, she goes, very good. She says, well, why don't you tell me? And I'm like, I don't know. I says, but whoever it is extremely powerful. I mean, literally, when I felt the energy coming off of this being, it hit me in the solar plexus so hard. It literally took the wind out of me. I mean, it was like a sucker punch right to your gut, And she's like smiling. She says, well, can you tell me if it's male or female? And so I kind of focused on it for a second. I'm like, it's definitely male. And she smiles again. And she says, very good. She says, Master Katumi is right behind me. And I'm like, Master Katumi, who is that? I have no idea. And for all the reading I've done, I don't have a clue about who the masters are. Okay, so you have to keep that in mind. And she always has to remind herself, because I didn't have so much of what so many seekers come in with. You know, I didn't know who Archangel Michael was, literally, when I came into my work. So I was always asking her questions, because, like, you know, what's the violet flame? Who's Saint Germain? Like, what? Like, what is all this stuff? I have no idea. So that happened, and you know, it was amazing. You couldn't deny that that had happened, right? And those beautiful little signposts along the way that I'm always referring my students back to is, you know, you had that experience, and you have to hold that. You know that that was real, that that was just as real, if not more real, than what you're walking in day to day here. And, you know, there are a lot of times where we get so sucked into the energy of this paradigm here that we completely lose sight of the reality of these beautiful experiences that we've had. So that set me up really nicely, you know, right from the get-go, that whole thing with Kutumi. And so that was basically, you know, I met Atona Reyes, and from that point on, you know, we were just kind of constantly IMing back and forth and phone calls, and we kept moving with the spiritual retreat, and that moved through, I guess it was about February, the end of February, and then things kind of dissolved out there. It wasn't. For whatever reasons, things just dissolved. And at the time, she had been down in Florida. And when this all came about, she came up to me. And she came and actually lived with my family for 3 weeks. And when she came and lived with us, you know, it was like, it was go time. And I started working with her. So it's kind of funny. There was a time where Archangel Michael had said to her, but she shared with me, because he said it when I was there, that I was like, what was the wording he used? I was on the fast track, right? I was just like, the fast track to enlightenment, or whatever it was. Oh, my goodness. Because I was completely immersed in this work, in dissolution work, which is, you know, incredibly difficult for most people. Because if you work a regular job, well, you know this, you know, if you work a regular job, like, even though it's always running, you have to be focused in the world. And, you know, I was blessed with having a husband who's a very, very devoted daddy. So, you know, when he was home, I was able to, you know, there are these times where, you know, and God bless him, because he had no understanding of what I was moving through at the time. But, you know, when you start dissolution work, it can be extremely traumatic. And, you know, you're literally coming up against all of the beliefs that have, you know, condensed and created this outpicturing of your reality. And you're realizing that they're based on nothing, right? And so you're guessing, now you're second guessing everything, and you have all this stuff that's coming up. And of course, once you start, you know, even the masters are setting up situations. So you're getting triggered, like, and all this stuff is going on. So, I mean, there would be times where I literally, what I learned to do was that when I recognized that trigger, I would just drop everything, and I would go to my room, and I would grab my journal, and I would just sit down and I'd process, you know. And sometimes I'd be, you know, locked up in there for 2 hours or 3 hours, you know. And it was, in hindsight, you know, what I recognize now that I couldn't recognize at the time was how difficult it was on my husband, because I kind of just left everything in his lap. And yeah, I'm forever grateful that he kind of hung in there with me during that, because the beauty of it was that coming out of that whole time, you know, she was with us for 3 weeks, excuse me. But then after that, I mean, I was heavy in my dissolution work for, a good 6 months anyway. I mean, it was just constant. But the beautiful thing was that coming out the end of it, you know, I had a capacity at that point to see him, to see my children from a completely different vantage point. You know, it was like the first time I really was seeing them with my heart. And it seems, you know, I think for a lot of people who haven't walked the path yet, that can sound really harsh. Like, well, what do you mean you were a mom and you weren't seeing your kids with your heart, you know, or you didn't, like, are you saying you didn't really love them? And it's like, in a sense, yeah, because you're really not even capable. you know, when patterned consciousness is the one running the program, it's only loving based on its own sense of what love is, right? So it's kind of like with the children, you know, do I love you this moment? Well, of course I do, because look at you, you're beautiful and you're doing everything mommy wants you to do, right? But in the moments when things weren't the way I wanted them to be, was I feeling loving toward them? No, not so much, you know? I was a very balanced mom. I didn't fly off the handle a lot with my kids. You know, I would save that for my own private space in those moments. But still, you know, I could witness through doing so much work, I could witness those moments where their behavior would be such that what I would do is I would just literally withhold my love from them. And that was the probably the first most beautiful thing I witnessed in the work, was that all of a sudden I had a capacity to love them regardless of what was going on in the moment, you know. And you know, that's the treasure of the work, is to stay in a state where you're constantly in love with everything, you know. So that's where that led. And during that time, make sure I'm still on track. During that time, when I was doing all of this really deep dissolution work, I came up.
Can we clarify for 1 second what dissolution work is for everyone?
Yeah. There is no short answer to that, right? I mean, okay, so we'll keep it. I have a lot of students who are listening tonight who know the answer to this, but there could be people who have no clue, right? So we'll keep this very basic just for tonight. If you think of it, of course, most people, anyone listening to BBS, I'm sure, has the concept of the ego pretty much locked in, right? And we would refer to it as, it's a bit more than just the ego. We're going to call it patterned consciousness, right? And that's literally what's kind of walking the planet right now. And dissolution work is the process that one goes through. You know, and there are different paths to it, but the path that I walked in particular is literally the process of using a portion of the lower mind to literally dissolve the lower mind. And that, it may sound very confusing to people, and just bear with me, folks, because as we continue to move week by week, you'll get a very solid understanding of what that means. Because that almost sounds like, so what are you saying? Like you're going to make yourself go crazy, right? What you realize is the way you've been living is the crazy stuff, right? But at the time, it's like, okay, I'm going to use my mind to dissolve my mind. Like, what is that? But dissolution work is just that. Literally, the construct of your personality is nothing more than a construct. It's a matrix of concepts and things that were kind of solidified by believing in them. And once we believe in something, then we create situations where now, in order for me to continue to believe this, I have to constantly polarize with it, and then it allows me to be judgmental. When I'm judgmental, that just, you know, reaffirms my own belief structure, you know, which makes it even more solid and more solid. You could think of it as like, you know, if everything is energy, the energetics behind the beliefs become very dense, right? And if you want to equate that to what's going on literally in a physiological sense in the brain, you know, your neuronet and the way that the synapses are, the way everything fires, that neuronet gets stronger every time you reinforce the belief that you're holding, right? And so, of course, it's like the addict who starts, you know, not being an addict, but after a couple months of, say, heroin use, now they can't do without it. But now what they are discovering is that they need a bigger hit of whatever it is they're taking to get the same rush, right? Well, it's the same thing going on in chemically in your brain, as all these synapses are firing and these chemical cocktails are being produced and they're docking in. Every time that happens, it's like it's making that connection a stronger connection. And obviously that doesn't disappear overnight, right? Took a long time to create it. And so the process of dissolution work is literally to stop. There's a particular, we would call it in my work, we would call it the primal imprint. And the primal imprint is this this movement of consciousness where it becomes identified, and all of these states of mind come into being in a particular order, but it's like simultaneously, they're all just boom, 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 boom. And everything moves so fast that you literally can't witness it. Now, you know this, of course, you've done this work very intensively. In the beginning, you know, you're lucky if say you came to me, you know, and you had an issue, and I'll say to you, so give me an example of something that happened that really ticked you off recently, right? So you tell me your little story. And yeah, for you, you're like, which one? Right. So you come to me and you give me your story, and then I'll say to you, okay, so, you know, you take your journal and I'll say, so I want you to go ahead and write down the states of mind that you witnessed, that you moved through. And so, of course, the first thing is like, you know, what's a state of mind, right? And then we have to kind of look through that. So just give me emotionally what you were going through, you know, and in a 5-minute thing that happened to you, most people, when you sit down with them, maybe can pull out 3 to 5 different emotions that they witnessed. And really, there's so much more going on, but it all happens so fast that you can't witness it. And so the process of dissolution literally enables you to pull on a piece of the lower mind that we would call the observer, and allow the observer, it's kind of like the observer is the reporter that's watching the personality, right? And so as you hone the ability to be the observer, now the observer can watch what's happening, and it can literally go in and slow down the process. And as it slows it down, it starts to see this amazing pattern emerging. And what it witnesses is that this pattern is happening every time they're getting upset, you know, that as Atona always says, and I love it, you know, the name and the form changes, right? So today it's, you know, I'm mad at Bob, you know, my neighbor, because, you know, he stole my trash can. And then tomorrow I'm mad at some stranger, you know, who cut me off in traffic. And then the day after that, I'm mad at the sky because it rained and it wasn't supposed to rain that day. So the name and the form changes. But what happens is you start to witness that what you are experiencing on an emotional level is the same exact pattern every time. And beyond that, you begin to realize that this is what everybody is doing, that there's nothing unique about you. Everyone is experiencing the same exact pattern. It's just that where you're at in your particular spiral, right, it spirals down and it spirals back up and it makes a loop. And where you're at in your particular loop is a different place than, say, the person across from you is at. So when we look at that other person, we think of them as separate because we're experiencing a different part of their loop, so it doesn't seem to synchronize with ours, right? And it keeps everything very hard to witness, but that's what comes. And so dissolution work is the process of literally slowing it down so that you can start to see how the personality was even constructed, you know? And then at that place, you move into a whole nother thing where you literally watch yourself dissolve. This concept of who you were just starts to disappear, you know. And, you know, so a lot of people, the question, well, why would I want to do that? You know, like I kind of like who I am, right? And it's not that so much as the who you are is incapable of functioning from the heart, right? Because everything that happens, you know, everything that happens from the vantage point of patterned consciousness is based on 3 things. It's based on domination, manipulation, and control. And every single thing you're doing is working to maintain one of those, right? So you may look like, I love this, you know, people be like, oh, I'm really altruistic. Oh, are you really? You know, would you still be that way if you weren't getting the payoff of having people, you know, say, oh, you're so wonderful, or having, you know, whatever kind of accolades you get, or, you know, whatever it is. And a lot of people, when they really get in to their work, they'll realize, oh my gosh, like, I'm not doing it for the other people at all. I'm doing it for me. I'm like, yes, you are, right? Which can seem like it's very, you know, I want to say frustrating even more than that. It's kind of like, oh, so you're showing me like what a jerk I am, you know, right? And in a sense, kind of, yeah, because that's what it is. You know, patterned consciousness was birthed out of the space of fear. And it has worked very, very hard to create this false sense of being okay, and it has to work really hard to maintain it. And it's not good at maintaining it, you know, so you're on this constant emotional roller coaster, and that's just what it is. And from that space, you know, it's very rare to have those moments where true love, you know, where you actually reside, to have that come forward. And it certainly does, you know, a mother with her children experiences true love, you know, and on rare occasions, wives and husbands experience true love. But it's pretty rare. And that is the beauty of dissolution work, you know, is one thing has to dissolve in order for the other one to move forward. So is that enough there so I can finish my little personal story?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. So, where was I? I knew Atona. I was working with Atona. Okay. So through this process, I came to a place where I kind of stopped, going to that weekly meeting. I felt like I needed to just stop all of it. I had kind of moved into a space of being a guide in a certain way, because I recognized early on that I was starseeded. And that's kind of another story. Maybe we'll hit that next week. But I did know I was not from this planet. I knew. And it finally dawned on me one day. I was standing out on my deck and I was thinking to myself, why is it? Because I had something happen. And I was like, it was like emotionally horrible, and I'm completely alone. And I found myself standing out on the deck going like, why is it that every time something happens to me, I'm alone, you know? And I heard this voice say, it's because you are alone. So, duh. But beyond that, I understood there was another meaning to that. It was because my true family wasn't here. You know, I do have an Earth family. I adore them. I absolutely adore them. And they are people that I have moved through time with, no question. However, my truer family, in a greater sense, I had a very strong sense that, you know, I was kind of here without them. At least at that time, you know, I hadn't linked up with them to recognize them. And so because of that, I became very adept at like walking into a room, and I would know immediately who the starseeds were. You know, starseeds, earth angels are walking. It's like I could just see them. Boom. Like there you are. So I started having people come to my house, and we'd have these meetings on Saturday mornings where, you know, it was just about being that, you know, like because everyone experiences it feeling, you know, they all feel different. And you know that. So I was doing that. And then I came into a space where I knew like I need to even stop doing this. And it's time for me to cut everything off. And I did. And after some time away, you know, months, I don't know how many months, maybe it was like a year. I think it was. It was like a year. I had this thing. It finally came to me. It was like, you know, it's time for you to start doing this work. And I was a little terrified by the concept of that. You know, I knew other people who had been doing dissolution work. I knew people who had been doing work with Atona and were out teaching. And she had said to me early on, you know, now you are not to teach this. Like, you're not ready, you know? And I took that very seriously. Of course, now I think she had an ulterior motive for saying it because I'm the consummate student, right? We had to rip that away from me. So it's like I had to move into the space where it was just my own doing. I recognized it's time, you know, with no one else telling me you should do this, with no one saying anything. If anything, I was getting the opposite, right? But I had to come into my own understanding and then function from that. And then I started, I had a weekend where I ran a workshop at my house. I had five brave women show up to go to this workshop. And, it was life altering for me. Sunday afternoon when they left, and it was all done. It was like Friday night through Sunday. And when they left Sunday, I went back up to my bathroom, my little bathroom, and I sat down on the toilet, looked out the window, and I just lost it. I just completely cried, because what I recognized in that moment was that I had actually committed myself, that there was no going back. I saw the responsibility level of what I was going to be moving into, which is very high. And I saw that it was not something to be taken lightly, and it was overwhelming for me. And then it wasn't too long after that when I started the Create a New World site and the meetup group in Charlotte, and then had people starting to come. And then it wasn't, I don't know how long, because you started with Create a New World before we even had Shambhala Center, right? And it wasn't, I guess, I don't know, maybe a year in or something where we started, you know, I was like, it's time for Shambhala Center. It's just time. So, you know, maybe we'll never have property. Who knows? But we can be Shambhala Center and we can live it, you know, and be that in the world. And that's when we started holding group satsang, and kind of one thing led to another. And now I'm trying to hold group satsang on a telephone line. So, yeah. Yeah, so that's in a nutshell. I mean, one question, it took an hour, right? Almost. We have like five more minutes left. Is there anything else that I could answer quickly tonight?
I think just going forward with everybody listening, is there anything in particular that they need to keep in mind? I know for me, in the beginning, it was we're not here to change anything. We're here to see through it. So is there anything that you want the listeners to know going forward?
Yeah, well, that, you know, I would just say that if you feel called, like I have a very, very specific energy. And I always say to people, you do not end up in front of me unless there's a reason you're in front of me. I mean, it's not a coincidence. But what I will say is this work will scare the daylights out of you when you really get into it. And you can attest to that, right? it absolutely will. So I would just say, just trust in the process. Trust that I have walked this, that the only reason that I'm doing this is because I have actually walked this path. And I don't do this from anything I learned in a book. I don't do it from a video I watched on YouTube. I do it all from my personal experience. And that is the thing I use to teach, is I will always refer back to experiences that I had. And it's a beautiful thing because we all are having these same experiences. They look different, but, you know, you'll have something and then I'll have something that I can add and say, oh, you know, I remember when that happened to me and like this is what mine looked like, you know, and it's beautiful confirmation for the students too. But yes, and what you just spoke is brilliant because that, you know, again, I'm constantly using Atona's words, but they're perfect. They don't need to be changed. And one of them is that she would say, you know, we're not here to change anything. We're here to see through it. And the greatest message in that, and that will take on more and more meaning for you as you do your work. Everything is kind of like that. You know, it's like an onion. You just keep peeling layers. Like you think you get it today, and in a month you have a completely different understanding of the same thing. That seems to be ongoing. I haven't found the end of that, and I don't think I will. But with that particular saying, the beauty of it is that in order to make change here, it actually doesn't come from the place where you want change. Change is an automatic happening when consciousness changes. And to say that, you know, like the whole thing would say, you know, war and peace, you know, we want peace, we don't want war. Well, it's polarized. And as long as you're going to hold that, you have to hold both. Because everything that's happening here in third dimensional reality is all about balance. You know, everything is represented here. Everything is. And we can't ever get to the place where there's more light than dark, right? It doesn't have to happen here. That's the thing that it's hard for people to understand. You know, change doesn't have to happen here. Change happens within you, and you wake up to who you are, and then what you experience in your world is change, right? But not because you reached for it. It's because you became it. Does that make sense? So that's a beautiful quote, and that would be a wonderful thing for people to write down and to kind of refer back to, you know, in the next week until we meet again, that we really aren't here to change anything, but we're here to see through it. You know, we're here to understand, you know, we can use this intellect that we do have to understand why things function the way they function and to see the role that we're, you know, kind of playing in it. And then use that to continue to do the work to keep that, you know, you're creating this lack of a better word, like a distance between you and that personal self that has been running the show beforehand. And that's where change comes. When you're in your heart, that is where the change comes, you know, and it's just a natural thing. It's beautiful. Yeah, so I would say that. So if we're in our last, you said 5 minutes? Yeah.
Yep.
So can I just quickly, for people who are not familiar with me, I guess I'll have to talk just a little bit more about my lineage and everything maybe next week in the beginning. I had no idea it was going to take me almost an hour to tell my little story, my not so little story. As we used to say, you know, to make a short story long. right? So I would like to say, if you're interested in finding out a little more about us, what we do, or just kind of staying in touch with us, can I guide you first to our website, which is at www.theshambhalacenter.org. And Shambhala is spelled S-H-A-M-B-H-A-L-A. And then we also have a very active Facebook page, and we're constantly posting, you know, different quotes and things from masters that are in alignment with our work. And that is at facebook.com/theShambhala Center. And we would love to have you go on and like us there. And if you like us, I guess you continue to get our posts when we post things. But we're really active. I post things on there every day. Sometimes my own writing, but sometimes it's just quotes from other people that are, you know, amazingly gifted. For those of you who are resonating with me, I will also direct you to another amazing, amazing, amazing VBS radio program, which is with Commander Lady Athena. She's very, very dear to me. She airs on Wednesday nights at, is it 6 o'clock Pacific time, I believe. You might want to check, but she is on Station 1. Please check that. And she has the voice of the Ashtar Command. She does brilliant work, and I owe a lot of my own growth to Lady Athena. So I'm giving you a nod and my heart right now, Athena, because you may be listening. But I think that's it. Do you have anything else you want to say to everybody?
Nope, that's it.
That's it. So thank you so very much for joining us tonight. And we hope that you will be with us next week. We'll do a little bit more chatting, and then we're going to start in with some actual dissolution work. So my greatest and deepest thanks to all of you. Much gratitude. Thank you, PLEN, for being here with me. And I send you all my love, and hopefully we will see you next week. Thank you so much.
You are divine.